The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll and the home of Duff McKagan's joke of the week. Here we go.
Hey, Chris Jericho. It's Duff McKagan calling you from Seattle, Washington. Hope you're doing well. You know, yesterday I spotted an albino Dalmatian. It was the least I could do. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Yeah, I like that one. Did you get it? I spotted an albino Dalmatian. It was the least I could do. Think about it. Duff always doing great to be on time, calling in jokes every single week, no matter where he's from or what he's doing. Thank you to Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Duff McKagan. And thanks to Joey Ryan and his magical dick for making everyone laugh this year as well. Actually, very controversial, both in the ring and out. A lot of people on social media not happy that I'm having Joey Ryan on Talk is Jericho today, and others are ecstatic that I'm having him on. But guess what? It's my show. I can have on whoever I want. I'm nonpartisan here. If you think Joey's controversial, then check out this interview. If you think he's very entertaining, then check out this interview. And if you think neither and don't like it, then skip to the next one. That's all I got to say about that. But Joey's going to tell us all about how he became the king of dong style. He's also talking about his WWE tryout, why it didn't work out, the intergender matches he was doing with Candice LeRae before she signed with NXT, and his current role with PWG. Let's go with Joey Ryan, the controversial Joey Ryan, king of dong style, getting started right now on Talk is Jericho.
So in doing this job for so many years, it's rare there's people I haven't met. Now, I'm not sure. Have we met before?
I think a couple times when I was an extra at WWE, but I'm sure you see a lot of extras. So.
Yeah, because I think that...
But not officially.
I think there was one time when like you and Matt were extras or something like that? Or like
you've been from the Young Bucks?
Yeah.
I was. I mean, a couple times I was Young Bucks with the Young Bucks.
Mm-hmm.
But even, I mean, I started doing stuff in like 2005 for them. Mm-hmm. So, and, you know, I became friends with Dreamer. I think I met you one time when I was sitting with Dreamer. But yeah, I mean, those are obviously things I remember because I was a fan of yours. So.
Well, that's what I was asking. So like I said, like, this is actually really cool. So basically the first time ever Joey Ryan and Jericho meet is here on the air.
Yeah.
Which is cool because I've had other times before. Like I had Jeff Cobb on the other day and I met him for the first time in my hotel room. So a little bit more of an awkward situation.
Right.
But this is really cool because when you hear and follow kind of what's going on with, you know, wrestling outside of WWE, for example, the name Joey Ryan comes up all the time, especially over the last few years. So many things that we can talk about, but one of the big things, and this is what you're going to be doing today, is bar wrestling, and this is your thing, right?
Yeah, you know, so I wrestle for DDT Pro in Japan, and they have a lot of promotions under their umbrella, and I did a show for them called Tavern Wrestling out there, and you know, the Japanese audience is a lot more reserved. They're a lot more, I guess, quote unquote, respectful. You know, but this was like a party with a wrestling ring, and it was the cheap tickets, cheap alcohol, and it was wrestling in front of drunk Japanese fans who were screaming and hollering like, you know, like we're used to over here in America. Mm. And it was just such a cool feeling. It was my favorite show I did over there because it was so different, and it felt more or less the most like home there. And so I just kind of borrowed that idea, I guess, you know, standing
up. Was it in a bar?
It was at
a tavern?
Yeah, it was a tavern, yeah.
Right.
And it was, you know, just standing on the shoulders of giants. You know, I took that idea and brought it home. And it was kind of cool because, you know, I started PWG with five other guys.
You started PWG?
There's six of us that we did.
Really?
Yeah. In 2003, we started it. And
who are some of the other guys that were involved
in it? So Super Dragon, Excalibur, Scott Lust, Disco Machine, me, and Top Gun Talwar.
Who's Super Dragon?
Super Dragon, him and Excalibur are the ones who are running it now. Mm-hmm. Everyone else has kind of gone their separate ways. Super Dragon, he doesn't wrestle anymore, but, you know, early 2000s, mid-2000s, he was very...
I've heard that name.
Yeah. He was very, influential. He was one of the first bigger indie names to pop up, you know.
Gotcha. So you guys are a bunch of SoCal guys.
Yeah.
And what was your concept for PWG? Because PWG... just became, once again, another one of those companies you hear so much about,
yeah,
but so kind of under the radar, and that's the way you guys, they wanted it to be.
Yeah, PWG definitely is supposed to be more of a punk rock vibe.
Mm.
But yeah, no, so six of us were, because there was a lot of stuff going on in Southern California in the early 2000s, like XPW, and then there's another promotion called Epic Pro Wrestling that popped up, and they were like these big, you know, money promotions that had promoters who didn't really know what they were doing, and they would... You know, they would hire all these yes men and get sucked dry of their money for two or three shows in and be done because, you know, that's the way wrestling, a lot of wrestlers are. They're very opportunistic.
Right.
So we just kind of got tired of dealing with the people who didn't really know the industry. And granted, I was only 3 years into the industry at that time, so I didn't really know anything, but I thought I did. I thought, you know, I know wrestlers, I know wrestling, we don't need a
promoter. The innocence of youth.
Right. We don't need a promoter. So we just decided to run our own show, and we brought AJ Styles out for it. I think it was the first time he was in Southern California, maybe ever, or at least a very long time. For the debut show, and it was just, you know, caught on, and enough people bought tickets and bought the VHS copy of the
How
show.
Did you guys get money to even afford AJ between your own selves?
Yeah, we all pitched in. The six of us all pitched in. I think maybe $500 or $600 each. We got a cheap venue, cheap ring. Most of it went to AJ. I mean, AJ obviously wasn't commanding the kind of money he is nowadays.
But if you're paying him $1,000 or whatever, $1,500,
yeah,
half your budget.
Right. You know, everything, you know, it was just a lot of other SoCal guys. So I think AJ was the only flight that we purchased at the time. So, you know, it was just something that we thought, you know, we could do. And, you know, actually that's not true. I think M-Dog, Matt Cross, was on that show too. So...
still very minimal expense.
Yeah. So... yeah, and we just ran one show, and it was successful enough to run another and another and another, and then it just became a thing, and it was like kind of lightning in a bottle kind of deal. But as the years went on, you know, a few of us dropped out, stopped wrestling, you know, went our own ways, and you know, I just decided that I wanted to kind of do something on my own. You know, I wanted to try my own ideas and not really have to, you know, I'm obviously more character driven, I'm more maybe comedy based too than the PWG brand, so. I wanted to bring some of my ideas to light that I didn't really have the opportunity to with PWG. So that's why I started bar wrestling, which essentially, you know, like the show in Japan I did, I hope feels like a party. Oh, by the way, there's wrestling, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's the idea behind it.
What was, just to go back to PWG, when did you stop being involved with PWG?
When I got signed to TNA and I was exclusive there, that was back in 2011,
gotcha.
I want to say. Because back then TNA guys couldn't work the indies. Mm-hmm. I left the promotion because I had to. And then I was in TNA for 13 months, which is a funny story too.
Okay.
It was one of those things where, like, you know, they signed me for a year with a year option. And then, you know, when my year was up, they sent me a FedEx saying, hey, we're going to pick up your option. And then a month later they called and fired me. So 13 months.
We're picking up the option to fire you.
Yeah. So 13 months, I was in TNA, and then when I came back to the indies, I started doing PWG again, but I didn't come back to doing any office duties, you know, like, because I was, you know, part of the machine before, and then I left for a year, and they, you know, different people picked up the different jobs, and it was running smoothly and growing still, so I just came back as talent at that point, and then I guess that would have been, 2013 when I came back, and then probably... 2015, maybe 2016 was my last show.
I guess what my question is when you mentioned PWG became a thing, what was it that made it a thing? Because like I said, it was to this point still, but when it was in that theater, was it Reseda?
Yeah. Well, I mean, Reseda came, I think, around 2006. So about 3 years in, we started doing Reseda shows. But
you're selling out like in 5 minutes.
Yeah, not back then. If you look at some of the videos there, it's pretty empty. The room's pretty empty. You know, I've done PWG shows in front of 70 fans, you know, back then.
I guess what made it become the thing where it was selling out so fast?
I guess maybe just, I mean, maybe because places like Ring of Honor didn't travel out west, so it was kind of like the West Coast Ring of Honor. It was just, you know, and also because I think Southern California specifically is kind of an island on its own. So it's,
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Like, no one really paid attention. So you could use these guys that were under Evolve contracts because Evolve didn't care, and you could use these guys under TNA contracts and Ring of Honor. You could have all these dream matches that would only take place there because, you know, obviously, you know, Evolve and Ring of Honor aren't working together to or letting talent work each other in New York because that's both their territory. Right. But Southern California is so far away from everything that, you know, you could have TNA guys, you know, which at that point they, like AJ and Daniels and stuff, they, you could book them through TNA. So,
and because it was West Coast where they didn't really go to.
Yeah.
And not on TV.
Right. Per se, right? Yeah. So a lot of stuff got under the radar then, which was creating these dream matches and moments. And then, I mean, I think it's just the whole, you know, boom of social media and stuff and the footage being available faster, you know, I think that helped a lot too, because, you know, when I first started wrestling or getting into wrestling, you know, if I wanted to see a show that, an independent show that took place in New York, I'd have to, the show would have to happen. I'd have to wait for, you know, RF Video to put it on their website. Well, probably not even website. They're little zines that they would mail out.
Right.
And then I'd have to order it and probably get a third generation copy of it, you know, and then I'd watch it 6 months after it happened. But, you know, when
did you used to do that?
Yeah, for sure.
So you grew up a big fan?
Yeah. You know, I grew up in LA, so we didn't really get much WCW or NWA here. We were, you know, very WWF. You know, centric. And then when I started learning about all that other, all these other wrestling, I wanted to get, you know, tapes and see how the bigger scene.
I remember we did one show for WCW in LA at the Forum, I think.
I was there.
Were you there?
I was there.
Yeah. They call it like the WCW Live Saturday night or something like that.
Yeah. And I was there wearing probably some WWF shirt, cursing WCW fans because, you know, there's the divide. You know?
You're the loyalist, right? It really was the divide.
You had to choose sides.
You had to choose your side, right?
Yeah, you definitely had to choose your sides. There's no crossover. And obviously growing up in LA, I was a WWF guy.
Because you would get it so all the time.
I mean, it's my childhood, you know. Yeah. I don't, you know, my emotional connection was with Hulk Hogan, not Ric Flair. You know what I mean? So
I'm the same.
Yeah.
I grew up in Winnipeg in Canada where there was no NWA or WCW back then.
Yeah.
It was all, you know, AWA switching to WWF for sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just what you grew up knowing, your environment, I guess. And then probably around high school age, I kind of started to, maybe junior high age, I started to kind of like be too cool for wrestling a little bit, you know, like I was like, I'm into other stuff now. And then my older brother actually introduced me to ECW, which kind of brought me back into wrestling because that was the cool, like edgy, like, oh, this is for adults. You know, I can watch this and feel cool. I'm not watching, you know, trash men or hockey players. No offense to those wrestlers.
No, but that is the truth, though. Even working there, there was so much more of a vigilante vibe to it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, for sure. And so ECW brought me back into it. And, you know, I remember going to the ECW show in LA, too. One that they did at the Grand Olympic, I think.
Oh,
maybe.
Yeah, they did one at the Olympic, yeah.
I think it was the Grand Olympic. I can't remember exactly. You know, CT is a terrible thing.
We all got it, brother.
It brought me back into it. And then obviously the Attitude Era and the Monday Night Wars became cool and a thing. And you could wear your wrestling shirts to school and be proud of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, and then I guess after I got graduated high school and was going to college with no real direction, is when I decided to get into independent wrestling, or at least train at a school.
Who'd you train with?
Jesse Hernandez, who I believe you're familiar with.
Yeah, it's funny. I met Jesse. He trained a guy called Mike Lazansky.
Yeah.
And we went there, I think worked out one day. And of course, years later, it's like, trained by Jesse Hernandez, Chris Jericho.
Yeah.
It's like, not really.
I remember, like, obviously they're gonna build it up. I remember when I first went there, they weren't pushing that they trained you, but they got you ready to go to Mexico or something, because you know they have the lucha
one
influence.
Afternoon of workouts. Yeah. I guess that counts.
That got you ready to go to Mexico and become a star
in '91.
But I mean, that was a big selling point to it. You know, me coming.
Hey,
into
not,
that.
I was actually yeah. Chris Jericho trained
pictures,
here.
They definitely were good about getting pictures of the guys that were. You know, like
it was Jesse Hernandez and Billy Anderson.
Bill Anderson, yeah. They were both together when I first started, but they shortly split after, and I stayed with Jesse and.
What's Jesse doing now? You ever see him around?
Yeah, he's doing the ring for the shows for Bar Wrestling.
Oh, nice.
He still runs the EWF.
That's cool.
And I rent the ring and his sound system for these Bar Wrestling shows.
Good guy.
Yeah, he's real good guy.
I was going to say about PWG, and I was going to ask your opinion on this, because there's the two big revenue streams for the company.
Yeah.
You mentioned the VHS tapes leading to the
EVs. Yeah, yeah.
And then, of course, just like the fact you could have all these dream matches that you couldn't have anywhere else. Now, I don't know, they probably, I'm assuming, don't sell a lot of DVDs anymore.
No, DVDs, it's mostly streaming.
Done,
and stuff.
Right?
Yeah.
And then I was going to ask you this, where they're signing so many people now, Ring of Honor signing, and obviously AEW and WWE signing anybody they can get their hands on, is that going to affect a company like PWG or even Bar Wrestling when there's less people out there that you can bring in to have these matches?
It could, in theory. The Young Bucks were able to get Ring of Honor to okay them doing PWG.
Right.
And then other Ring of Honor guys were like, hey, why do they get to do it and not us? So
you can work, you can only work Ring of Honor except for PWG.
PWG is the only one in the States, you know, because they don't travel to California.
Right.
So they got that okay. Now that's an every Ring of Honor deal. So PWG, you know.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. I think it's part of the deal that they all have, is that, you know, the one West Coast promotion you can work.
Mm-hmm.
The exclusive is, I mean, but I think, I feel like wrestling just rolls with the punches, and it, like, you know, you take all these guys off the market and it gives opportunity for new guys to step up and become stars. And, you know, I'm obviously just pulling examples out of my head, but, you know, WWE signs an Adam Cole and pulls him off the market, and then all of a sudden MJF is here to step up, you know, and, you know, maybe the opportunities aren't as prevalent if Adam Cole's still taking all the independent bookings.
Sure, business, right?
Yeah, yeah, you know, I mean, there's a lot of talented guys out there who just need opportunity, and I think, and you know, so far it's been okay. I mean, promotions have bounced back and found guys and filled the voids. I mean, it's definitely a hit, you know, because those guys are established stars. So, but I think, you know, I think it's not the end of the world. It's not doomsday for independent wrestling.
So when you started Bar Wrestling, you mentioned you wanted to do this tavern wrestling you saw in Japan. So what was your first show?
The first show, who did I bring in for the first show? I'm trying to even remember. No, I just used Jeff Cobb, Willie Mack, Brian Cage, a lot of guys I knew from California. I did bring in Matt Cross again. Ivelisse I brought out for the first show. Candice LeRae wasn't signed with NXT yet, and her and I were doing we're an intergender team, yeah. So,
which is so rare that you were intergender team, but you weren't. I just assumed you guys were dating.
Yeah,
that's always the way it goes, right?
And you know what I think? A lot of times, though, because when we were first establishing being a team, there wasn't really too many intergender teams going around. I'm not saying that we, you know, brought the fad to wrestling,
sure.
But you know, we did a few things, like we started a YouTube show together because we wanted people to start branding us together as a team. It was really supposed to be a one off, but then we got T-shirts made and matching gear made, and we just kind of ran with it. Because we wanted people to start thinking one of us with the other and try to push this idea that an intergender team could be a team that could travel and wrestle guys, wrestle girls, do whatever. So, you know, there was a lot of speculation. We never really clarified. We weren't together, but for the idea of branding us together, we let people speculate. Mm-hmm. We didn't, like, you know. So there was a lot of speculation. So I think still to this day there is, even though she's clearly married to Johnny Gargano, I think there's a lot of speculation there still, but we just kind of let people think what they wanted to. We've been best friends for, you know, gosh, almost 15 years now. So just kind of a thing where, you know, we just decided we want to wrestle together.
Mm-hmm. So when you're talking about you wanted to bring some of the comedy elements to it, and that's a part of the Bar Wrestling style as well.
Yeah.
Like even tonight, it's called Three's Company.
Three's Company. Trios Tournament.
Trios Tournament, but named Three's Company with the lettering and all of the stuff. I mean, obviously, that's a lot of your personality.
Don't get me sued. Don't get me sued by whoever owns Three's Company.
I don't think they're going to be listening to this. They'll be okay.
Okay.
Norman Lear, if you're listening, don't sue us. But what are some of the other things that you've done in there that are different from what you might see in a normal show?
I guess, I mean, I don't, there's no championships. There's no storylines. I try to make wins and losses as minimal value as possible, which which maybe doesn't work when you're trying to, you know, run a serious promotion. But I just want, like, I want people to be go and have a drink and not have to worry about, you know, oh, what happened last show between these two?
Right,
oh, is there heat here?
That makes sense.
Are they feuding? I just want people to, like, let their guard down, have a drink, not have to think, just watch wrestling. And so the matches themselves are standalone. There's no real, I mean, there might be a storyline for the night, like when we had Macaulay Culkin do some stuff with us.
That's awesome.
So we had, Hornswoggle come out as the disgruntled elf and, like, I hate Christmas. It was a Christmas time show. I hate Christmas. I hate it. Oh, look, we got Kevin McAllister here. I hate your movie, blah, blah, blah. So he started, like, so the theme of the night was, like, he came in with, like, a group of the heels who were trying to steal Christmas. We had decorations up. They tore down all the decorations. So the whole night was, like, the people trying to steal Christmas against the people that were, I think you maybe Sola Darling used to think she was on that show. So we, you know, and then at the during the main event, we had, Hornswoggle and, Peter Avalon and Ray Rose. This is like the heels, and then me and Candace and Dick Justice, who was playing Santa Claus as the babies. And, you know, the refs went down and weapons came out. And then Macaulay Culkin, you know, rolled marbles in the ring and the heels did the big slip. Then he climbed up on the top rope and swung a bucket down and hit his Hornswoggle. He did all his Home Alone tricks.
Where did you have a bucket hanging from the rafters?
No, we actually, we did, I put Candace on my shoulders and she held like the string and then was connected to it. And then he just swung it down. He got up on the top rope and just swung.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
It down at Hornswoggle.
That's great. It beat the Wet Bandits. Why couldn't it beat Hornswoggle?
Right. So, you know, there was a storyline for that night specifically, but from show to show, there's typically not. And like I said, there's no champions. There's no rankings. There's no real value behind winning. It's just, you know, go have a good time.
It's a standalone show where you want people to come and hang out for a couple hours and have some drinks and have some laughs and go home.
Yeah. I want to take advantage of an intoxicated audience.
Yeah. The more you drink, the better the better the show is.
Yeah. Don't think, just drink.
So how many shows do you do? Is it a monthly thing or?
It started out as a monthly thing. And then, so I was running these shows in Baldwin Park, which is about 18 miles east of LA. Cause venue was cheap and, you know, they had two bars in the venue and they loved it. And they eventually, you know, because they were making so much money on the bar now, they loved having us. So we were doing monthly shows there. And then these places in LA started, seeing like, oh, you can draw. The other thing is I run Thursday nights because I don't want to take work away from myself.
You work on the weekends.
I'm usually booked every Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So I don't want to have to turn down a booking to work my own show. So I started doing, so I just said, oh, let's try Thursdays. And Thursdays were a hit. Especially, you know, in LA, nobody, you know, everyone.
Well, there's nothing going on really on a Thursday night.
Right. And nobody has real jobs, you know, to get up for. No college kid takes a Friday class.
Right.
So, but these LA venues started saying like, oh, you can draw on a weeknight, you know. So they started hitting me up and they were like, hey, can you bring that show to us? So I've run in three different venues. Last year I did 20 shows in over the year. This year I'll probably do a little bit more. So probably twice a month. Sometimes last year I ran three times in a month, which got a little bit hectic. But just Wednesdays and Thursdays, and it's just, you know, as long as it's going well, I'll keep doing it. Because I usually only use my friends too, so it's not like I'm dealing with drama.
I'm trying to look up right now the actual names of the teams.
Oh yeah.
Tonight, but I can't. Oh, maybe I'll look up SoCal Uncensored.
Oh yeah, there you go.
If you can find who
the actual website. Yeah,
the actual Three's Company trios that will be involved. So these are mostly, like you said, just mostly your friends.
Yeah, you know, because I don't want to deal with drama. I don't want to deal with like, you know, being held up or being like. I don't want to deal with like people who need to be like if I have someone sit at the airport for an hour because I can't get them a ride. I don't want them to be like calling and screaming. I'll be like, I try to be like, hey, you're gonna be at the airport for the next hour. Sorry,
deal with it. Right.
Sorry. You know, right. So like everyone I book is a friend of mine or close. Somebody, you know, that won't cause me too much drama. And you know, I think that's helping me run these shows, because if it was a headache every time I did it, I wouldn't want to do it.
Because that's the thing. Like, and we'll get to the names because there's some great names here. But for me, like even with the crews that I do, we did one and now we're doing another one. The last thing I ever wanted to be was a promoter, and having to deal with, well, this guy wants this and that guy wants this cab and this guy refused to do this. I'm like, I don't care.
Yeah.
But you can't do that. You have to be okay. Calm down. What would you like, sir? Let's make this work. Where it's hard to do. And yeah. Now that's, is something you ever wanted to be a promoter or?
I mean, I got a taste of it pretty early with PWG stuff.
Right. Yeah.
But, you know, being solely in charge is a different animal. And I find the hardest thing is that everybody wants to work. So, and there's only so many spots.
Right.
So you can't tell somebody like, hey, I just don't have a spot without it sounding like, hey, I don't think you're good enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like, it's hard telling people that they can't be on the shows or give me some time to fit you in eventually or whatever it is. That's the hardest part, is telling people no when they want to work.
Right. And then trying to tell them that I'm going to pay you this. Come on, you're the promoter.
Yeah.
Hey, you make money.
Yeah.
Not necessarily the truth. So are you coming up with all these names that we got here?
Yeah, I think I named most of them. I let some of the teams name themselves, like when I couldn't think of something. But
well, obviously SCU. I like Body Guys.
Body Guys,
that's,
yeah.
Brian Cage. I drink Ryan Taylor. That's a old school wrestling term for he's a body guy.
Like, he's a body guy.
A muscle head.
Yeah.
Right. I remember Scott Hall once. I'm glad I was never a body guy. It doesn't matter when I get fat and old. Dances with Wolves.
Yeah, it's Taya Valkyrie and Chris Wolf and PJ Black, who's the Darewolf.
The Darewolf, very good. So are you putting together these teams?
Trying to find a common bond.
Yeah, and then so you don't have all these people booked and then finding the teams.
I mean, a few of them are regulars, but...
Right. So when you're thinking Dances with Wolves, that'd be, I need three wolves.
Yeah, right.
How can I get here? The Handicapped Superheroes.
That's
Zach Gowen only has one leg. I know that. Who's Gregory Iron?
Gregory Iron is what? He has Bell's palsy. Is that what he? Yeah, he's Bell's palsy.
Okay.
Yeah,
I've heard of him before.
Yeah. He's great.
I was just saying, what is Joey Ryan?
I mean, I'm a superhero. You know, I have a superpower. Okay. Obviously,
and we'll get to that.
Yeah,
we don't want to hear about that.
Yeah,
Hard Eyes Emoji. That's a good name.
Yeah,
Jake Atlas, Ray Rojas, and Heather Monroe.
Yeah,
High Risk Wrestling. Are they the High Flyers?
They are, and that's also a nod to the Young Bucks promotion that they had when they first started. They called it High Risk Wrestling
in
Victorville, and Brandon Cutler who's on that team he's one of their boys. I think he's just got announced for AEW too, for Double or Nothing.
Yeah,
Brandon Cutler. Yeah.
Right. He's gonna be in the Over Budget.
Yeah, he's one of the
Bucks
old buddies that used to wrestle
at
High Risk Wrestling.
There's so many similarities between the Hardys and the Hardy brothers, Hardy Boys, and the Bucks.
Yeah, I don't think that's an accident, but yeah.
Right, exactly. Both had their own promotions and all this sort of stuff. And here's yours, Solo, Land of the Lost. Luchasaurus, which is the best name, Jungle Boy, and Solo Darling. Are you prehistoric as well, or?
But I've been a creature for my whole life.
Yeah, they're all creatures. Then Jungle Boy, are you familiar with Jungle Boy? Luke Perry's son.
He's also an AEW.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
And Luchasaurus, I actually follow him on Instagram because I love the idea
of
the Luchasaurus. So you guys are kind of these creatures out there. Look out, people, tonight. The real deals, D'Lo Brown, Andy Brown, and Willie Mack.
Looking at the real deals
Common
now.
Common bond there.
Yeah.
Sex and Violence, Killer Cross, Scarlett, and Ricky Shane Page. Where does Ricky fit in with Scarlet and Scarlet Killer?
Ricky's he's best known for his deathmatch stuff. He's not pigeonholed in that environment, but he's not afraid to do it.
He's like the violence.
He's kind of like a Jimmy Havoc, I guess.
Known for that stuff.
Yeah.
The Carnies.
Carnies.
Carrie Awful, Nick Iggy, and Trip Cassidy.
Yeah, they're based out of Nashville. you know, they They're getting buzz in the indies a little bit, yeah. So I brought them out one time before, and I just thought I'd bring them back because there's three of them, so it works for the trios.
It's perfect for the trio, for Three's Company. I like the name Nick Iggy because he's in the Carnies as well. Two Butchers and the Blade. Wow, that sounds dangerous. Tyler Bateman, Pepper Parks, and Andy Williams.
Yeah, Pepper Parks was Braxton Sutter in TNA for a little bit.
Yeah. Pepper Parks sounds like a stripper that I used to date in the early 90s.
Andy Williams is from the band Every Time I Die.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I've heard about him.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, so he does wrestling. And,
oh, very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard about him. That's awesome. And then the Watts Nest Monsters.
Yeah, that was probably the least creative name because it's just Watts and the Rock Nest Monsters. But they named it. To be fair, they came up with that one.
Because there's a guy just called Watts.
Watts. Yeah, it's his last name. But yeah. He's actually, his real name is Eric Watts, but he doesn't go by that because
probably
of.
Probably for the best.
Right, right.
I know him. He was he in one of the Tough Enough?
He was a Tough Enough, yeah.
All right, exactly. Yeah. So anyways, point being very creative, sounds just reading those names for tonight's show sounds like a fun show.
Yeah. Yeah,
so is it fun for you to sit down? Are you booking it like putting the graph down in the grid and these guys are working these guys and those guys are working these guys? And
I'm actually very lazy about it. So yeah. I just kind of come up with it at the last minute, but I put it together and just decided I kind of booked backwards what I want the finals to be and then go backwards from there.
Someone's got
to
crack the whip, man. You got to be the boss.
I know. I actually, in probably the worst idea I've ever had for a tournament, I thought, wouldn't it be awesome if the show opened with the winners celebrating in the ring, being held on each other's shoulders, just big parade, and then all of a sudden you hear a record skip and everyone stops, and then one of the people's in the trio's voice comes on the PA, says, "I bet you're wondering how I got here." And then we just start the tournament for the
dude. I think that's a great idea.
So we give away the finish and then we just show how they won.
I think that's a great idea. I love that. It's like that one Seinfeld that you don't know it's going backwards. It's, you see Kramer's got the giant, the little bit of a lollipop. And as the show goes on, the lollipop gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And then you realize at the end it was reverse.
Yeah.
I think that's a great idea.
All right. Well, I think we should,
if it's bar wrestling.
You're right, right.
Wasn't there a thing out here for a while? Like, is it Lucha Vavoom?
Lucha Vavoom, I did those shows last week.
Oh, that's still, they're kind of the same vibe. Like, just complete wacky.
They're more of a variety show. Actually, Cody Rhodes calls them the best kept secret in wrestling because the shows are so fun. They draw huge numbers. They draw 2,000 people.
Right.
They sell at the Mayan Theater in downtown LA,
and they've been running the Mayan for years.
For years,
I might have even went there that weekend I was here for that WCW show back then.
Yeah, because they've been around
for a long time. Yeah.
But they it's a variety act though. It's burlesque dancing. It's wrestling. It's comedians.
Because Simbodi has that too. The Freak Show Wrestling.
That's
kind of another one where it's got the ghost of Michael Jackson versus the ghost of Whitney Houston and those type of things, right?
That's he does more. I've done a couple of those shows. He does more where he books wrestlers and then gives them. I guess Brian Kendrick kind of does that too a little bit.
Oh,
where he books wrestlers and then gives them personas that he comes up with in his crazy twisted mind.
So you mentioned earlier, and it's funny because I see you with a beard now. It's like before you had the stash. Like the
it comes and goes.
How did the whole Joey Ryan porn star game? Well, let me go back a bit further. You mentioned that I met you a couple times at WWE tryouts, never got a gig, just never had any, they never had any interest, or were you told anything? Or
so, I mean, I guess when I was doing extra stuff back then, I guess never really came close. Jamie Noble told me once that, like, when he said when you're our size, you have to be perfect. So meaning that, like, you get, if you're giant 6'5" football player, you get a little leeway. But
right, they'll give those guys way more tries than the guys our size.
So but one of my favorite dark matches, or I guess it was a velocity match I had, was Sylvain Grenier because it was in LA and people in LA know me, and so I'm doing this match and he's putting heat on me, he's got me a chin lock, and the crowd starts chanting Joey, and I'm just like this unsigned extra guy, and in my head I'm like, oh, this is amazing, like, how can they, this is awesome, this crowd doesn't know me. Josh Matthews puts it over on commentary, this crowd is behind Joey Ryan, and I'm so pumped, and I walk to the back through gorilla position, and I don't know if they did this on purpose to screw with me, or literally nobody watched it. There was nobody at Gorilla watching this match. Not even Ricky Steamboat, who agented it. Oh. Nobody was watching this match. And I was like, oh, God.
You guys are going to watch the TV? Yeah, come on, guys.
Right. I'm sure they all sat down and watched Velocity together. But
Linda, it's dinner time. Velocity's on.
I guess the closest I ever came was probably after I left TNA. When
you said you got fired.
Well, I got, yeah, after I got
they
fired.
They let you go
game.
Or they fired you?
They fired me. Well, I guess they let me go. Well, I guess that's the same thing, isn't it?
Well, I fired you, you got in trouble for something.
No, I didn't get in trouble. I was told it was budget cuts. So they were filming, they were doing Orlando every week, and Bischoff decided that they wanted to take the show on the road and run different arenas, and the arenas weren't drawing well at all, and they were just like bleeding money. And at that time, they didn't re-sign RVD. They didn't re-sign Matt Morgan. They let me and like Taylor Hendricks and a bunch of Christian York, a bunch of us go because they were bleeding money. And I'm always like, so like TNA wasn't doing great and nothing. And Sting is an amazing guy and so cool and watched my matches and gave me input when he didn't have to. And I want to put over how much I love Sting. But when I think about what they were paying Sting to not draw to like
500 grand a year,
right?
Or something,
like,
or,
yeah. Nigel McGuinness once said it was like a starving family deciding to cut baked beans out of the diet but keep eating filet mignon, you know, like, but
it's a great one,
right? So
that kind of derailed you from
there. They let me go. And I guess if you want me to complete the story with how it transitioned to almost a WWE job, I literally was let go in July of 2013. That month, I was invited to be an extra at WWE. And Regal liked me, and Road Dogg liked me. And Regal called me, and he said, hey, or no, no, he, no, I think he had somebody call me. They said, we have a tryout in August. Because at this point in 2013, everybody's going to the Performance Center to do these tryouts. It's the only way to get signed.
Right.
We have this tryout in August, or we have one in December. And you can go to either one, but Mr. Regal would like you to go to the August one. So I was like, okay, sign me for the August one. So I thought I was like on this expedited, like, they really want me. Fast track. And then I go and do the tryout, and for whatever reason, and I've heard some things since then, but for whatever reason, Bill DeMont doesn't like me at this tryout, and he kind of puts the kibosh on them signing me, which actually got me pretty depressed and like wanting to quit wrestling for a little while. But
you come so close, right?
Yeah, it came so close, and I thought, here's my opportunity, and like Regal likes me, Road Dogg likes me, but then, you know, I guess it's kind of similar to like when, you know, the Young Bucks didn't get signed because Booker T didn't like them, you know,
it's a similar story.
It's like you need 10 guys to sign off on you, but if one guy doesn't,
it's what the last person in the ear hears.
Yeah.
Like, great, 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 great. It's bad.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
You know?
So it's similar. So, you know, that kind of got me down a little bit, you know, and I really did almost quit wrestling after that.
That's what kept you going.
It was kind of a thing where, so I did my tryout. I left. I knew DeMont didn't like me. I was already depressed. I went home. I did a PWG show with Drake Younger. If you're familiar with Drake Younger, he's a referee at NXT now.
Yeah. Of course, I know him. Yeah.
He's a real infectious personality. Yeah, real happy guy.
Yeah.
Real positive guy. And I wrestled him at PWG, and he was just so energetic and just like, hey, I got this ideas where we're gonna pull out Legos and act like they're thumbtacks, and like, you know, and we're gonna.
This shit hurts. Stepping on a Lego hurts.
I think I'd rather do thumbtacks than Legos. But you know, he just said, and we were just kind of having fun, and it was a really fun match. And it kind of, I was like, okay, well, you know, if I change my goal, if my goal is no longer WWE, if that's off the table, I'm just going to wrestle for me and have fun with it and do, you know, and just be more open to ideas and not worry if WWE is watching not worry about if, you know, if there's any, you know, reactions, negative reactions, just, I'm just gonna wrestle for me and have fun. And shortly thereafter is when Candace and I started teaming, which was another thing where I might have been like, oh, WWE shouldn't, you know, we're doing these intergender things and WWE's PG now. They're not. It's one thing that I might have thought not to do.
Right, sure.
I it turns out it doesn't matter because they still signed Candace, but, but you know, it's one of those things where I would have, and then it started getting me thinking about wrestling differently because now we're doing this intergender tag teams where you have to think, you can't just rely on what you've done because, you know, you're obviously a man and a woman teaming, so there's different elements to, you have to make it make sense because I think the audience is capable of some very deep suspension of disbelief, but you don't want to straight out insult them. We don't want Candace to have to, you know, do a strike exchange with some.
Right, exactly.
You got to make it make sense.
Yes,
they're willing to play along with you.
Was the Tessa and Brian Cage match with those bar wrestling matches?
No. Well, okay. we did the rematch of bar wrestling.
Yeah,
but the first one was Wrestle Circus. Yeah,
I watched that match, and that's. a perfect example. You're not having Tessa punch Cage in the face or vice versa.
Yeah.
But you can make a very entertaining match around those.
Right. You got to use your momentum leverage.
Mm-hmm.
And you can make it make sense. And so that now I've got a whole different creative outlet for wrestling, and I'm thinking about wrestling differently. And Candace and I are gaining a bit of notoriety, a bit of success. We're traveling a lot. And now, you know, it's kind of restarted wrestling for me, because now I'm having to think about wrestling in a different manner. And then I still don't really know how, but or who recommended me to them. But then DDT Pro Wrestling called me in Japan, and they wanted to use me. And I started going to Japan for them. And that's when the penis thing becomes a thing.
Let me just do one thing before we get into that. It's a very interesting story that you say that, because, and you guys know, Steel Panther, obviously. The story of Steel Panther is the same as yours. They were rock musicians on the strip for years, came close. I mean, Ralph was in so many bands. Everything bombed, and they finally just went like, screw it. We're just going to have fun, and that's it. We don't care anymore. We're not going to ever make it, or it's very slim. Let's just have fun and do something completely different, and now they're playing arenas.
Yeah.
Same vibe. When you don't care, that's when you start having fun and fall in love with the business again, and then people, it's like you said, it's infectious.
It's true. It's
so, you know, so you're talking about the DDT, and then let's get to the story of Joey Ryan. Dick wrestler.
famous
dead dick wrestler.
For a little while,
On BTE when I mentioned your name.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously the character is very, my character is very like porn star-esque.
Porn star, yeah.
And then there's this wrestler in DDT named Dan Chugodino, who is, and the political correctness in DDT and in Japan is a little bit different.
Right.
He plays a gay character, but he does very much like the, I'm going to freak out my opponents by being gay.
By being over the top. Like Goldust was in
90s. Yeah. Which, I mean, maybe I'm looking at a glass full, but I think when I'm watching it, I'm like, oh, he's so proud of being gay. Like this, I don't see it as a negative,
mm-hmm.
but maybe I'm just trying to justify it in my head. But you know what I mean? He's very confidently gay.
But also in Japan, it's a different attitude towards gay people there than there is here.
Sure.
So to there, it would be like, you touched your ass. Oh,
yeah.
It was here in 97. They're 20 years behind.
Yeah. And so he does this thing where he, you know, he wrestles and he grabs his opponent by the crotch, and you know, the opponent, like, oh, why are you grabbing? And then he like suplexes them, or like dragon screw leg whips them by their penis. and he, you know, and so that's kind of his thing there. And we're going to wrestle for the first time. We're on opposite sides of a 6-man tag. And, you know, they even did like press conferences, like, oh, the, you know, the porn star guy is going to wrestle our gay guy, you know, whatever, like this whole big thing. And so we were trying to come up with some ideas for it. And, you know, he pitches to me, and this is me giving him full credit for the idea.
What's his name?
Dan Chugodino. I do believe Dan Chuka translates to sodomy.
Okay.
Not 100%.
Our Japanese speaking fans can clarify that at Talk is Jericho.
And so he suggests, it is broken English. He says, maybe I grab you, but maybe you no sell because American cock is so big and so strong. You know, because he's the Japanese guys all the time, and he wants to play off the stereotype. And I was like, okay. And then we come up with the idea where, like, I bump him instead.
Mm-hmm.
And it's our opening spot of the 6-man tag. And it's not, we don't think about it more than that. We go in, you know, blah, blah, blah. He grabs it. I flip him, whatever. We go on, do the rest of the match. And now I'm pretty self-critical when I watch myself back. I'm like, oh, this could have looked better. This could have been better. But when I watched that match back, that 30-second clip made me laugh out loud, and I was like, okay, I gotta cut this 30 seconds out, throw it up on Twitter.
Right.
And I did, and like, you know, within hours it was everywhere. It was insane. It was on ESPN, it was on The Soup, it was on all these news sites, it was on Stephen Colbert, it was literally everywhere. Rolling Stone, Sports Illustrated. It was insane how viral this video went. And you know, and there's no manual for that. There's no like, oh, what to do when your video goes viral. Mm-hmm. So I was just trying to, you know, push in and capitalize on as much as I can. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to get a good 2 or 3 months out of this before everyone.
So what shows was it on, you said?
With the DDT Pro ones?
Yeah, you said it made.
Oh, viral. Yeah. It was on The Soup on E-Entertainment. It was on Tosh.0 on Comedy Central. It was on Highly Questionable on ESPN.
So what are they showing? Like, look at this.
They're showing like, yeah, like, oh, look at this happens in Japan. And like, you know, some of them put like a little blur over like where he's grabbing me and stuff. But
so you made it on The Soup.
Yeah, I did make it. You know what's funny on The Soup is they had, and I'm going to forget the actors' names, but they recreated it with Putty from Seinfeld.
David Warburton or whatever?
Yeah, Patrick Warburton.
Patrick Warburton.
And the Asian guy from The Hangover.
Oh, Jung.
Yeah. They recreated it in the studio with them.
Are they saying this is Joey Ryan or is it just nameless guy?
They just showed the video. They just showed the video. But like, you know,
he's getting over, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so, you know, like, and I said, okay, this is awesome. I'm going to get like 3 months out of this before everyone's sick of it. And I have to, and then, but it just kept going and going and no pun intended, growing. And it still is to this day. And every few months it'll hit like another viral spin where I'll get tagged in it a bunch of times. And I don't know who's posting it that's new or whatever. And it'll just get this, you know, and it'll just go crazy. And you know, one of the biggest things I ever got was like, everybody would say like, oh, my family knows I'm a wrestling fan, so they sent me this clip of you. So it was like, you know, all these people that were just getting sent this clip, and you know, and then so like I just trying to capitalize on it, I decided like I was gonna make like my penis a weapon, and you know, I was gonna base my entire matches around trying to get somebody to grab it. And you know, and it's just funny and it's silly and it's, but it works. And like, and I think the important thing is, as Joey Ryan in the ring, the character wrestling, I don't treat it like a joke. I don't treat it like it's comedy.
That's the secret.
That is the secret.
That's the secret.
I'm very serious about you grabbing it because I want to hit my move and win the match.
I think it's going to beat you, right?
Right. It's my Stone Cold Stunner or my, you know, my pedigree or whatever it is. It's, I have to hit my move to win the match. So I need you to do it. And so I'm very serious, but there's no tongue in cheek. There's no like, look at this fake thing I'm doing, because I in the ring, you know, I don't ever treat it as if it's not real or, you know, fake. And it's actually, you know, I think people appreciate it. And like you said, that's the secret, is that you gotta get people to believe in it.
You're committing to it.
Right, right. And, you know, it's still, like I said, it's still going and it's still getting me notoriety and it's everywhere. And it was like, and even on All In, you know, I didn't even wrestle a match with Hangman. I just came out and did the flip and 10,000 people were chanting rest in penis, you know, because I came back from.
Wait, well, you also didn't just come out. You came out with a bunch of giant condoms.
But that was all storyline based. You know, there was, it wasn't
because the Being the Elite was that Hangman Page murdered famous dick wrestler Joey Ryan.
Yeah.
My first appearance on Being the Elite, they're like, say what you want, can you just say at the end, didn't you kill famous dick or whatever? And I was like, oh, okay, cool. But that was the storyline in that world that led to your big return, rest in penis.
Yeah, right? So, and that's all just, it's all just commitment to the character, because like I said, there was no match. Me and Hangman had a year-long rivalry feud with no match.
Mm-hmm.
There's been no match between me and Hangman. And people are still into it, you know? And it's a testament to Being the Elite, or, you know, like the YouTube stuff, or, you know, getting characters over in a different way, you know?
Before I get into my opinion on this, I want to ask, has anybody ever been able to counter? Is there a name for the move?
So when I first did it, I got sponsored by YouPorn.
Did you really?
Yeah, they
call you up.
They called me up and they said, hey, we want to sponsor you. We'll send you swag, blah blah blah. You know, wear it out and they asked if I would name the move after them. So so it was the YouPorn Plex for a while, but that sponsorship, the deal, the time period ended. So now people just call it the Dick Flip or Dick Move, I guess. But yeah.
Has it been countered?
The only person so far that has not been affected by it is my wife.
Mm.
Because it makes sense that
she a wrestler?
She's a wrestler.
What's her name?
Laura James.
Okay.
So it would make sense. And she's actually on Being the Elite as Joey Ryan's hot ass wife.
Okay.
That's her famous dick
that's
wrestler.
Her name. Right.
So when I've wrestled with her before, she's unaffected by it, which makes sense in
of course.
That she wouldn't be, she wouldn't sell for my penis.
Let me say this, okay, so there's a lot of contras, but the guy that pops to my mind right away is obviously Jim Cornette.
Yeah.
Hates the concept. You guys are ruining the business. But to me, and I want to get your opinion on in a second, when you see it at first, it's ridiculous, it's funny, but also like you're committed to it. What is the difference between Mr. Socko and Scotty Too Hotty's the Worm, and the Bushwhackers battering ram with the head.
Stink face, too.
Stink face. Took the stink face a number of times. And believe me, the last thing you would really do is sit there with your face in some guy's ass as he's rubbing it back and forth. And the dick flip. It's the part of wrestling, like, it's the same thing as going, you're killing wrestling because you hit the ropes and ran back. To me, if you did that in the middle of a, you know, Kenny Omega, Okada, 60-minute draw, no.
Right.
But in the context of what you're doing, how is that so much different from the stuff that George the Animal Steel was doing 35 years ago that everyone loves, of, you know, biting the turnbuckle and licking you? And Brian Knobbs rubbing your face into his armpit. What do you think about that? Have you ever spoken to Cornette about it or people of that ilk? Do you even bother caring what they think?
I mean, it does sometimes because, you know, I know how hard I work, you know, and I know the schedule I keep and I know the effort I put into everything. So, you know, it doesn't feel great when someone, you know.
It bothers you.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like if someone would have told me that when I started wrestling school, you know, that if I got really successful at this, someone would call me a piece of shit on a daily basis. You know,
like, probably respecting Jim Cornette.
Yeah.
You know, at some point, Jim Cornette.
Yeah. You know, I get it from him and a lot of other people. You know, it doesn't. Once I figured out that, like, you know, it's just words on Twitter or whatever, like, Jim Cornette can't affect my bookings. He can't affect my pay. Nobody of any consequence really pays him any mind these days. He's not influencing any promotions. I kind of just kind of have to let it slide and let him have his opinion. I don't need everyone to like it. I don't need everyone to be on board and buy Joey Ryan t-shirts. You know, I'm happy that people have their own opinions of it. But, you know, it just kind of sucks because, like, I think you could probably find a lot of hokey stuff that Jim Cornette did, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I think, you know,
because in this side of the coin too, and Jimmy's a good friend of mine. I'm just using him as an example, but anybody who thinks that way will also go and say these guys do way too many high spots. They're going to kill somebody. They're going to kill themselves. They're going to land on their head. They're jumping through tables and tags. Isn't this the easiest bump in the world?
That's another thing too.
What wrestling's all about, to get the most out of the least?
Yeah. Well, I mean, definitely less is more, right? And save your bumps and all that stuff.
I mean, you're taking a front flip bump.
Yeah. It's not even required. You could do a somersault and you could do a forward roll because the bump doesn't matter. You know what I mean?
That's what I'm saying. Like it's so easy and you're getting, it's like I said, Mr. Sacco is the best example. Has Mick ever?
Mick took the flip.
Mick would understand that times a million.
Yeah. He pitched it to me, by the way, which was mind blowing to me.
What did he say?
I was wrestling in Ireland and he was a commissioner for the night or whatever. And he was like, and I got there and the promoter was like, hey, Mick's over in this room over here. Like he was like kind of in a separate room. He's like, he wanted to talk to you. And I was like, oh, okay. And I've known him. I've met him a couple times, you know, previous to that. And I go in there and he's also like, so feel free to say no, but I have this idea. He's like, you know, after your match is over, we'll have the heels come out and jump you and I'll come out and save and I'll, you know, pull Mr. Sacco out and I'll Sacco this guy. And then I'll, you know, and then we'll bump into each other and we'll turn around and I'll think you're one of the heels and you'll think, you know, you're getting attacked again and I'll go to throw Mr. Sacco at you, but you jump and Mr. Sacco catches your dick and blah, blah, blah. And then you fire up and you flip. He's just right. It's the first bump he took after hip surgery too. So I'm like, am I going to re-injure McFoley?
Major concussions,
but like, here's this millionaire Hall of Famer Mick Foley calling my dick spot to me, which is mind blowing. I'm like, whatever you want to do, Mick, we're fine. You know, like,
but see, you look for stuff like that. Like I remember I was in the Royal Rumble. I just remember this the other day with Jack Gallagher as an umbrella. I was like, you know, I'll beat you up, whatever. Then I'll go in like this and stick your umbrella between my legs and open it and then like spin it around.
Yeah.
And it's the dumbest thing, but people loved it. And it's like, I want to do something with that umbrella. That umbrella needs to be used to inflict harm on me. Like anybody who gets the business would love that.
Yeah. I mean, I always say that I'm probably the most old school wrestler there is because, you know, my finisher's well protected, you know, like I do nothing, you know, I'm all shtick.
Remember Santino when he did the Cobra?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like he did it so real that, you know, you'd take it and take a huge bump off it.
Santino didn't sell it like it was a gag, you know?
No, so
like,
cause that's the secret. Yeah. You know? Now how far can it go? Cause I know there was some contract. I think you stood up for when Priscilla Kelly did the thing with the bloody tampon, which is a pretty gross thing, but she took it out and hit her opponent with it or stuffed it in her mouth or whatever, as a gimmick, obviously not a
real
bloody tampon. But I mean, there's a lot of controversy about that. You made a stand, made a comment about that, if I'm right, correct?
Yeah, I mean, I don't like, I mean, if wrestling's performance art, I don't like censoring any art, you know? And she didn't, you know, they were wrestling, you know,
In a bar.
It's
not
20,
a family environment.
21 and older crowd. And, you know, like, if there's an audience for it, because essentially we're living in a kind of a make-believe world, right? And if there's an, if it finds an audience, then is it wrong? You know, like, if people want to buy, I think she released a shirt that says, I bleed for Priscilla Kelly. If she sells a bunch of those, then is it over? Is it worth it? Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes I do seminars and, you know, which I don't like doing because I feel like it's hard to tell somebody how to paint a picture. You know, you just got to do it. Mm-hmm. But I understand that there needs to be some sort of structure. But when I do seminars and I say like, hey, this is how you technically do a headlock or technically do a headlock takedown. But if you can do a shitty headlock and get it over where the crowd pops for you every time you do this shitty headlock that looks terrible, but the crowd comes up for it every time, then it works. Mm-hmm. It's whatever gets over. I feel like that in wrestling. Whatever gets over is the quote unquote right way to do something.
How did you feel about that spot, Solo?
I popped. Mm-hmm. Huge. And my first thought was like, well, they must have talked about it. Mm-hmm. That's not real, right? That looks so good. Mm-hmm. It was flawless. And I agree with Joey because just as much as someone likes punk rock, you know, someone else likes classical. And there's so many different types of music that there are also that many types of wrestling. So we should all be able to look at that type of art. And there is an audience for that. And they should be able to get that art mm-hmm. put on stage for them. Yeah, everyone's okay with it.
I think that makes a sense too, because like if you're talking about some of those matches that you see, like the garbage matches in Japan, etc., where you'd have guys breaking light bulb tubes over their heads and like getting stuck in real barbed wire. I mean, that's just as gross as this scenario and far more dangerous, you know. So I think, like you said, you're either going to censor it all or censor none of it. Censor the body slam or censor the, you know, the Joey Janela bump from the top of the frickin' school into the back of the pickup truck covered in, you know, glass or whatever it was, you know?
Yeah. And I think a lot of times people forget that, like, nobody forces you to watch any specific wrestling. You know, like, nobody puts a gun to anyone's head and says, you have to watch Joey Ryan matches if they're not a fan of them. You know, there's a lot of choices. You don't have to watch my stuff, you know? So I feel like some people feel like because it's under the umbrella of professional wrestling that you have to be all for it or all against it. But there's really degrees of, you know, there's wrestling I don't like that I won't watch or whatever, you know. There's just, wrestling is such, I mean, it's cliche to say, but it's such a carnival event. It's a circus, you know. There's the juggling act, there's the clowns, there's the lion tamer, no pun intended.
Right.
You know, maybe you don't like clowns, so you don't go watch the clowns, you go watch something else.
It was great. I had Ricky Steamboat on my show, and he was talking about when he had the Komodo dragon. He's like, I had a Komodo dragon, you had a snake, you had a bulldog, you had a bird. It was like a freaking zoo back there.
Yeah.
But that's all part of the show, if that's what you're doing, you know?
Yeah, like you said. I think that as many different views as you can give an audience, I think the more, the better the show is. Because I think it complements each other. You know, I can go... I'm on a show. I'm actually wrestling Priscilla Kelly in a show in Las Vegas in March.
So that created kind of a ipso facto dream match.
Right. And the main event of that show is Tom Lawler versus Josh Barnett, which is the complete opposite.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these guys are going to do a worked shoot that's going to look great and it's going to be awesome and it's going to be intense and it's going to be all. But it's going to be the complete opposite. But I think the matches complement each other because. If we tried to wrestle like them, which we couldn't probably, you know, we wouldn't be able to even come close to that style and making it look as good, then the show would just be the same. It'd be like everybody trying to do the same match.
That's the secret of a great show.
Yeah.
Is to have the diversity. And even at the Tokyo Dome this year, when you have Kenny and Tanahashi, they're going to be doing balls out, false finish, amazing, you know, story. So me and Naito, what do? Let's do more of a violent street fight match. You have two great matches, but two separate styles, and that's what makes a good show.
They complement each other,
right? I know the finish for your match already, dude. I'm gonna tell you this right now. She's gonna, you're gonna coerce her to put her hand on the dick. She's then gonna pull out the tampon, stick it in your mouth as you got her in control, and it's gonna be a battle of the dick and the tampon, and you're gonna flip her over. That's what I think.
I win that.
I think so.
I win the. I usually like putting the girl over in intergender.
Well, then she.
But if you're agenting the match, we'll go.
She Mr. Sockos you with the tampon, and you're down and out, man.
Yeah.
But like you said, those are all the different styles, and when you mentioned before that just to forget about what WWE thinks or whatever mainstream thinks, and kind of do this your own way, and obviously you're working like you mentioned every weekend and doing all this great stuff. What is your end game? Continue doing this and try and build on what you're already doing, or do you want to go do more?
Once I kind of gave up the WWE dream, I kind of stopped because that was like a goal I had, and then I didn't hit that goal, and I got real depressed about it. I kind of figured if I'm more open to ideas, if I don't set myself up for failure, if I don't say like if I don't get here by a certain time, then I've failed. then it just makes it more, not only does it make it more unpredictable, my life of what door could open next, but, it just creates this anything's possible. Any door. Maybe I'll end up in WWE one day. Who knows? Maybe I'll go to AEW. Maybe I'll go back to Impact. Maybe, who knows? You know, maybe I'll go to Ring of Honor and be a straight wrestler. For who knows what tomorrow can hold. I've actually just, at Double or Nothing weekend, we're going to do a screening of it. This camera crew followed me around for about a year. And they actually got the Mick Foley stuff on there too. And it was like a documentary of Candace leaving to go to NXT and just my life as an independent wrestler. And I travel and I think it'll give people a real good insight about how just open I am with ideas and just how, you know, what, like I didn't go to that Ireland show expecting to do anything with Mick Foley, but there was Mick Foley pitching it to me. And I think that this documentary really captures it's called This Is Wrestling, the Joey Ryan Story, which they wanted to call it Joey Ryan Below the Belt, but I said, no, we got to call it This Is Wrestling so we could piss off all the wrestling periods. But it shows just how Wild West, I guess, the independent wrestling scene is. And I watched it recently and it's really good. And the thing about it too is that you're watching it and you're kind of forgetting that I'm doing stuff with my penis because you're like in this world of wrestling. And then, oh, by the way, he's doing all this stuff. So it came out really well. But I think to your question and to your point, I think it shows a real good view about how just anything's possible in independent wrestling. And I kind of love that vibe right now that I don't know what, you know.
And the thing is, too, you did what you had to do where you went. And then it's my motto, you reinvented.
Yeah.
And now you made your name bigger than it's ever been. So you are worth so much more to those other companies if you decide to go that route. You don't have to beg anybody for a gig anymore.
Right. You don't have to, I'm self-sustained, I guess. Yeah.
And that's the world we live in now. It's such a good time for the boys and the girls. There's so many. To me, boys are all people in the business. Yeah. You know?
I like that 2019. You have to clarify.
Yeah, I don't have to discern it. We're all the boys.
It's been that way. I mean,
we're all
the
man, right?
Yeah.
But to me, it's like we're even for me. It was always WWE. I'm going to stay in WWE for the rest of my career, and then suddenly all these new doors open from New Japan and AEW, where it's weird not to be there, but it's not the be all end all now, and not in a bad way. It's like you can go so many places and make a good living and continue to build your legacy. And not have to worry about if I don't make it here or here or here, it's done for me, as you've proven and so many others have as well. It's just opening so many more doors.
And it's funny too, because like people try to say, call me the quote unquote the dick guy as a derogatory thing, but like obviously I'm playing up being famous dick wrestler on being the elite. I like it because, you know, one day I'm not going to be able to wrestle, but I can do conventions, and if I have something that's notable towards me or some notoriety, like, oh, I remember that guy. He's the dick guy. Huh. Come pay for my autograph.
In a world of...
Here's $20 to grab my dick. You know, whatever carny...
Whatever it takes,
whatever
brother.
Carny shtick I'm going to be doing in my 60s, you know.
But if you're talking about 10,000 wrestlers in the world, and that's probably being pretty slight, let's say there's 30,000. The fact that you're known as this guy, that pulls you out of the pack. And I'll tell you what, dude, you'll be able to do that move at 7 years old. Hogan had to stop doing the leg drop at 50. You could do the dick flip till you're 70, man.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Last couple questions. A... What is your favorite match you've ever had? And B, what is your favorite dick flip that you ever gave?
Ooh.
And they might be one and the same.
I guess time periods, if that counts. You know, earlier in my career, I did an Iron Man match, which was with Super Dragon, actually, which was, I mean, I probably couldn't do an hour-long match now at 39, but I did it 24, and it's something that I'm proud of. I wrestled Jamie Noble once when it was a short stint on the indies back in like 2005. That really stands out for me.
James Gibson.
James Gibson, yeah. Because he was always a guy that like I was a fan of.
He's so good.
Yeah.
People forget that, underrated.
But I guess in recent times, stuff with them, you mean the Candace against the Young Bucks? The Guerrilla Warfare match we had, it's the hardcore match we had at PWG. People still talk about that.
Candace got color, right?
Candace got color. There was a big controversy over that too. You know, and it really established her, you know, as someone who was my friend or is my friend for so long. And then for her to like kind of niche her place in just being like, because that's when Candace is Tougher Than You popped up. Mm-hmm. And like she really like established her brand of not being afraid and not being, you know, standing up to anyone. it was like a proud moment as a friend too. And then the match, you know, obviously the Young Bucks are two of the greatest in the world. So, and friends of mine. So that might be my favorite match of all time.
Favorite dick flip.
I mean, obviously the Mick one's big. I think it's more, not necessarily the flip, but more like sometimes, like when I wrestled Billy Gunn and I had to explain it to him, because Billy Gunn looks like the guy, if he could just tear it off if he wanted to, right?
He has to be guys, this is stupid.
Right, right. Or, but he loves, you know, he also gets it, yeah, you know, sure, he gets it. So like, maybe, you know, it, not necessarily the flipping action, but just me having to sit down and be like,
explain it to someone that's probably never seen it before.
Yeah.
So what do you say? Hey, I'm Joey, I'm working it tonight.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes I just pull up my phone and be like, hey, this is my move. No, you know, I just tell him like, hey, I have this shtick where, you know, my penis is my weapon and blah, blah, blah. And I guess I can't really blah. This is like me dotting or whatever the Seinfeld. We're doing a lot of Seinfeld references here. You know, yada, yada, yada. That's what it is, right? Yada, yada, yada. I'm going to flip you with my penis.
Yeah.
And skip them. No, I was just, it's more of like a... hey, like if you're cool, and it's always me like, hey, if you're not cool with this, but I'll say that to anyone. I'll be like, hey, you don't have to grab my penis if you're not comfortable with it. We can work around it. You know, I wrestled Shayna Baszler and who, speaking of Josh Barnett, that's her coach. And she was like, hey, you know, I'm fine with all that stuff, but Josh will get real mad at me if I do anything that makes wrestling look fake. So we just planned a whole match where I kept trying to go for it and she just kept countering it. You know, because you don't actually. As long as I can tell the story of that's my move and
yeah,
that's
sure.
what I'm going for, it doesn't have to be.
Yeah, you don't always have to go get it.
Right.
You know, especially for someone like her with that type of a gimmick.
Yeah.
She's not going to fall for that.
Right,
you know what I mean?
Right. Right. You know, and it's easy with her because she's got all the submissions too. So anytime I grab her to go put her in it, she twists out of it and puts me in some submission, you know? So it's
or just twist your dick.
Right. Right. that, there's the real finish. But yeah, I mean, So you know, I always preface, especially with girls too. I say like, hey, if I call any, because I do this another thing where I the boobplex, where I essentially give a German suplex to a girl by her boobs, and I'm like, hey, if you're not cool with this, if you're not cool, these are things I do.
Mm-hmm.
Feel free, you're not gonna hurt my feelings to say no to any of it, because we can, you know, I can call for it, and you can. Some girls are like, I'm cool with it, but my boyfriend will give me shit if I let you grab my boobs. So that's fine. I'll go for it and have you grab my hands and counter out of it. Whatever. As long as I can call for it, people are like, oh, that's the move.
You're
that's
working your thing. Gimmick. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so I'm sure when I explained it to Billy Gunn, I was like, hey, I do this thing. Don't feel free not to do it. You know, because he's got those big bear paws too. So I'm looking at him like, you could do some
like
damage.
9 feet tall too.
You could do some damage if you really wanted to. But luckily he was really cool with it. And
your dick lived on too.
And my dick lived on.
Anymore
to
today.
Flip
to this day. So big show tonight. Are you ready? Solo, Land of the Lost?
Yeah, I'm really pumped. Actually.
What's your favorite match you ever had?
I actually just had a really fun one. I'm tagging with a female known as Willow Nightingale, and we are the Bird and the Bee. And
I like that.
We have a lot of fun.
Are you a bee? Are you the bee?
I'm the bee. I'm a little bit more waspy.
Because you sting or what?
I can, and I always go for the legs. Like, I'm going to sting you because I'm going to twist your legs up.
There you go.
It's so much fun. And we like to pick people up and put them down. And we wrestled Kylie, who'll be at AEW.
Oh,
and,
Kylie Rae?
Yeah, and she was tagging with Lainey Luck.
Mm-hmm.
And I love when people are really pumped about an idea and then they're also like, well, I don't know if you want to do this, but like I thought of it, and you can see they're really excited and they're starting to get taller about it. And they really wanted to start with a thumb war. And I was just like, let's just keep going for our finishers. Like, we all know each other.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just going to keep trying to do like what we call fight or flight, which is pump handle into moonsault, and they do a super kick German. So we just kept doing that, and then the rest was just fun. And we had such a great time, and everyone was really excited about the thumb war that we took. The two gator rolled out. They went all around the ring over the guardrail with the thumb. It was pretty fun.
Thumbs up.
Yeah.
Didn't you just do a thumb war with Cody?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the new thing now.
Micro tears in my tendon in my chest where it connects to the shoulder. So when that happened, so it's healed now, and I'm in physical therapy, so that's why I'm working again. But for a while, I couldn't work. So
Cody was
hurt with his knee. So and we're both booked for this Australia tour, and you know half the Australia, you know, is meet and greets because they don't get to see us. So the Australian promoter was like, "Can you please still come even though you're injured, and you know just cut a promo or something and do the meet and greets?" So Cody and I just came up with this idea where, like, we do, you know, we would do, I think one night we did a thumb war, we did Rochambeau another night. We did a staring contest, I think, too. Just to kind of like, just,
what's Rochambeau?
It's rock, paper, scissors.
That's what it's called?
Isn't that the real
thing? I thought it was called rock, paper, scissors. Wow, called, the very distinguished called, Joey Ryan.
It's called Dwayne Paper Scissors.
Terrible.
Can I change my favorite match answer to Joey Ryan versus Chris Jericho in 2020?
Oh, sure. Dude, I'll tell you what. I'll take that dip flip like a mofo, dick flip like a mofo. I'll tell you what, man.
Mark,
I get it.
Tackle
drop down dip flick. Dick flip, 1, 2, 3.
It was funny too because Mark Henry tweeted that he would take it too. I wrestled Mark Henry one time when I was an extra on SmackDown, and he's always been pretty cool to me. And somebody asked him about it on Twitter, and he said, I would take that thing's over. And I was like,
because the brothers get it. I'll tell you one last story before we go. When Scotty was doing the worm, Viscera went, I never taken that finish, man. I ain't never taken that finish. Next week, he took the finish. 1, 2, 3. So there you go. Always say you'll take the finish and deal with it there. Thank you so much, famous dick wrestler Joey Ryan.
That's all right.
Special guest Solo Darling.
Thank you for having us.
Cheers, guys. Thank you. Have a good show tonight.
Thank you.
All right, thanks to Joey Ryan. August 1st at the American Legion Post in Baldwin Park, California, is the next bar wrestling event in Southern California. And Out Come the Wolves will feature Scott Steiner, Tommy Dreamer, Brian Cage, Taya Valkyrie, Luchasaurus. He's going to be a future Talk is Jericho guest. Jake Atlas, a bunch more at Bar Wrestling on the Twitter, has all ticket information. And Joey Ryan's documentary, This Is Wrestling, The Joey Ryan Story, just screened at the San Diego Comic-Con yesterday. Joey's been screening it around the country. Follow him on the Twitter at Joey Ryan Doc to see where it's going to be next. And we know where Fozzy's going to be going next. You can go to FozzyRock.com at FozzyRock on the Twitter for that. I know we're going to be in Uncasville, Connecticut with Nickelback August 22nd and Atlantic City, New Jersey August 24th with Nickelback once again. And Fozzy's Unleashed in the West tour starts this fall, opening for Iron Maiden in Los Angeles on September 14th at the Bank of California Stadium. We're also, we booked a whole tour around it. September 5th is Denver, 6th Colorado Springs, Colorado, and Grand Junction, Colorado on the 7th. September 8th, Salt Lake City. The 11th is Crystal Bay, Nevada. 12th, San Francisco, California. 13th, Sacramento, California. 14th, Los Angeles with Iron Maiden, like I said. Vegas on the 15th, San Diego on the 18th, Tempe on the 19th, Tucson on the 20th. 21st is El Paso. 25th is Dallas. 26th is Houston. 27th, Hattiesburg. 28th is Atlanta, Georgia, the Masquerade. All dates will be supported by Jared James Nichols and selected dates with Sons of Texas. Go to FozzyRock.com to find all gig and VIP information. You do not want to miss any of these shows or any of these VIP experiences if you are living in the area where we're going to be. You'll come meet us. We'll play a private set just for you. All right. We're also going to be on Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at C Part 2. We are 93% sold out, less than 70 cabins left. You can see the progression here. You know this is no bum steer. We're going to be clean probably, I would say, by the end of middle of September, I'd say. So don't miss out. Get your tickets and cabins. Go to ChrisJerichoCruise.com. All Elite Wrestling has announced today, as you saw, the Young Bucks are going to be there, as well as Dr. Britt Baker and Hangman Adam Page, who I'll be facing at All Out August 31st in Chicago. They're joining Brandi Rhodes, Cody Rhodes, and MJF. Don't miss the odd on this, man. You know it's going to be huge. It's going to be amazing. Go to ChrisJerichoCruise.com and see AEW, Fozzy, Ric Flair, Kickaxe, Brad Williams. The list is ridiculous. Go to ChrisJerichoCruise.com. Get all the information and join us for the vacation of a lifetime. And coming up on Wednesday, make sure you join us as we're going to have another really big shoe. Well, this is actually crazy. Pretty much under the cover of night, my secret informant is telling us all about how UFOs are real. The U.S. government has pretty much admitted it via the Washington Post. And it's just a matter of time before they announce that aliens are real and living among us. This is true stuff, straight from a government informant who contacted me in a very secretive way. He's going to be here. SMQ is his name. I don't know his real name, but he's going to be talking about how UFOs are real. Next week, July 24th on Wednesday, you're not going to want to miss this. We will see you then. Stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you on Wednesday. Ah, yeah!